Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on Thursday, May the 6th. It is a special edition of Commodity Week with our panelists in studio, including Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, certainly through the time of the recording of this Commodity Week program at 4:30 on a Thursday afternoon, it's been a very interesting week around the globe with Greece and Chicago with what's happening there and the drop-off in soybeans and, of course, what happened on Thursday on Wall Street where the Dow Jones Industrial Average, Paul Cooley, dropped 1,000 points at one time, though it finished just 340 points lower. That's kind of surprising to say that's not so bad, but there were a lot of things happening. What'd you make of it all?
Well, it's an efficient market. Things happen rather quickly. You know, I've never seen a 1,000-point drop in the Dow, so to speak, in such a short time. But the fact is that we have to salute our financial system. Be able to handle the volume and basically show stability and actually see a pretty good comeback. I think the big problem is, of course, Europe, the euro dollar, Greece. We watched protests in the streets of Greece. There was supposedly a sell signal by Procter & Gamble that was a little distorted. But we'll know more about everything as the dust settles. But it's also a major concern about the financial stability of Europe, and I think that's the underlying problem.
The underlying problem, Dan Zwicker, and has it pushed the dollar higher? And we'll get back into the ags after we settle this out, but is that one of the things that's happening with the dollar?
That's the major factor that's pushing this dollar sharply higher because the dollar index that everybody watches is weighted with about 58%, or let's say 60% of it is euro-driven. The rest of it is driven by Japanese yen, a little bit of British pound, a little bit of Swedish koran, and I think some Swiss franc in there. So the major force, of course, is the euro. But we got to keep in mind that it's the dollar strength is just euro-driven, and it's not necessarily, from an agricultural point of view, going to be that severe of impact toward a lot of our customers, whether it's Japan or China. So the value of the euro granted is a major force in the marketplace, and it creates a deflationary pressure. But it's nothing to not take notice in, but I think it's maybe a little bit overblown when it comes to corn exports and soybean exports and wheat exports.
And you can see that, I suppose, Wayne, in what happened in Chicago. While soybeans were down pretty sharply on Thursday, corn futures held pretty well all week long.
Corn futures were tremendously strong when you consider what the Dow was doing, what crude oil was doing, and also what the euro was doing and what beans did. When you look at all of that and you look at the export sales that come out Thursday morning and the continued rumors that there must be something to the way that some of the commercial grain companies are keeping their bases narrow is that there must be some export business going on out there. Is it China or is it not China? We don't know. We reported good sales to Japan, but there's a lot of talk that there's still possibly going to be some Chinese sales.
We do know this about the Chinese situation in corn is that their basis levels internally are quite strong. Their prices basically approve buying U.S. corn. And the third thing is that it seems like every time they have a weekly auction, it's gobbled up, and there does seem to be some demand. Now, is it related to drought the previous year, or is it new demand? We don't know how much they're going to buy. It's been rather slow at coming, and I think there's still more to the story, don't you, Dan?
I think there is, but the trick is going to be is what actually China does. A lot of these shipments that they have bought, what little bit has been confirmed, to my understanding, is not necessarily going to really hit China until sometime in June. So it's still maybe 4 to 5 weeks away to see whether or not China will go ahead and allow that corn to come on into that country. So that's going to be the tricky part. But there is no doubt that there is interest from China. You can see that by the rumors continue to circulate about every other day. We continue to repeat the rumor, and I think there's probably some more sales to come, but it may not come right away. There are going to be shrewd buyers, and then nobody wants to get too long in front of possibly maybe the China government not letting it go in. At the moment, there's a lot of thinking that if China would not let the corn to come in, that they would just move it right on over to Taiwan and unload it. So I don't think you're going to see any real big shipments go until there's kind of more of a green light from the government.
So this does happen from time to time. The China says no once the corn arrives, but it appears
they haven't got the license approved yet. Now, you know, if you're a feeder in China, you can. What's doing it is your world export traders see that it pencils, that they can buy corn and they can ship it into China. The question is whether or not it's going to get unloaded. And whether or not the China government will issue a license to let that corn get unloaded.
And this signals, Wayne, what to the rest of the world?
Well, I mean, basically, they're looking and saying if it pencils into China, it's probably good for somebody else to own some of this. They don't want to let it fall out of graces that way. The other thing is we've seen a little better operation of ethanol plants, and the farmers, believe it or not, with all the corn and almost their bins all full, have been stubborn holders of grain. And we've seen Linden, Cargill at Linden, continually pay about a flat cash level price, even if the board goes down, to keep corn coming in, to keep the ethanol plant that reopened up there running every day. So the farmers, being tight holder, have held the basis together in our area.
Yeah, the ethanol plants and margins are good at this point. They're coming up and running at full capacity, right?
Not necessarily. The problem there is in ethanol is ethanol has not been keeping up with other forms of energy prices, whether it's gasoline or crude oil, and the reason is we're up against the blend wall. Until EPA makes that decision to go ahead and expand the blend rate maybe to 12 or to 15, which is desperately needed, I think it's almost a no-brainer for EPA to go ahead and expand that up. We got fuel prices at $3, the highest we've had for some time. If this country is going to recover economically, it needs much more energy values, better values, lower prices, and with the supplies of ethanol out there, they could do that real quickly and drop the price of gasoline with higher ethanol blend rates.
Okay, let's go to the next big drop. Of course, we got this nervousness about the financial world. We have this still a pretty good carryover of 1.9 billion bushels and a crop coming along. Just how high is corn going to go this summer, even if we have a little bit of hiccup as far as warm, dry weather, guys?
Oh, you asked it. You get to answer it, too. But we'll start with Dan.
Well, that's tricky. I mean, we have so much noise in the marketplace, and a lot of it is going to be currency-driven, I think. Good buys, but there is no doubt. I mean, when you look at the visuals in corn, if everything goes good from here on out and we have a yield equal to last year's, and if farmers are going to maybe add an extra million acres or so to USDA's number, we're going to have plenty of supply around. So upside potential doesn't look to be that great. But on the other hand, farmers, if you visit with them, they pretty much tell you they kind of need a four in front of corn, and they're not going to be real willing sellers of corn much underneath that price unless they're forced to at the time of harvest.
I'd have to agree somewhat with Dan and all of his reasoning and talking to farmers along the way. I also have to agree that that probably tops the market, because I think they will be aggressive sellers around the $4 level, because that is a level where they can make money, especially if the weather continues and they're going to have the production that looks like we're having. I have never in my whole lifetime seen this percentage of the crop planted and this percentage of the crop looking this good at this time of year. And that's in my whole lifetime, and I'm sure there's other people. It can't go back, because if you go back in the 40s, let's face it, Todd, we weren't growing 200-plus bushel corn, so it couldn't have looked this good back then. So as we look at things, there's an awful lot of corn that's coming on and looking good. We do still have a lot of time for weather to not be perfect, as we've had it so far.
Mr. Cooley, you at $4 and above?
Well, I agree. The $4 mark is somewhere where we do have to start taking some major market moves, and particularly if we do get a period in the July time frame, and I think it'll probably be a late July type weather problem, to do some marketing. Nearby, we're going to see a wet 10 days, and of course that's going to slow some of the final wrap up of corn planting in the Midwest, and being a slow start of this bean planting. But we do know that we have an enormous crop in South America to move. We have an enormous crop of corn to move here. And I think if we don't sell some grain, we're going to tax our storage complex this fall.
Acres. Talk about acres just a bit. And we go 10 days here where we've got maybe rain on and off. I think I heard our own weather folks say it's not going to be a conveyor belt of rainstorms that come through, but it will be fairly often. We're in the midst of bean planting. We're finishing up corn planting. Do you think acres will be up for corn? You have up until this point. Have you changed your mind?
Our exit surveys with about two or three key players indicate that there was probably 5% more corn planted early. And believe it or not, the price didn't have a thing to do with it. It was instinct. It was going in so good. The ground was working so good. And there is this feeling that we can still, it's more fun to raise corn than soybeans at this time. And that's the culture of the Midwest. And we get the feeling the same idea happened in a big place in Iowa, too.
As we talk to our friends in Iowa, our friends in Kentucky, our friends in Arkansas, and the seed corn dealers or the district managers and like that, they are pushing out. They pushed out that extra field to most all their customers, whether it was a 20, whether it was a 40, or whether it was an 80-acre field. That flex field that everybody had there generally went to corn and went in early. And in most cases, it is already planted. So I think, and the other smaller farmers that aren't planted now are probably going to stay pretty much in their mix. So I think that we're going to probably look at that extra 5 to 7% more corn
from your part.
Well, I think the key is how good was USDA's number to start with. I know that's the only official number that we have. So everybody's looking at that number, and then they're maybe adding some acres to that. But that number may be a little high to start with. So we don't really know for sure. But yes, I mean, anytime you get a planting season like we've had, which has been near perfect, basically, one of the best ones that we've had in a long time, every acre of ground is going to be planted with something. I mean, there's no reason not to plant an acre because it's too wet or we couldn't get to it or whatever. Just about any tillable acre is going to get planted. So that in by itself tells you that we're more than likely to push the acreage planting levels as high as we can.
And the acres players said the government didn't factor in the 2 million acres of the CRP very well that we're coming into production. And then another area that I think that's in question is, you know, there was some preventive planting acreage, and of course they did have a big, enormous acreage going into hay crops and hay. But with the price of corn and soybeans the way they are, that encourages production too.
Yeah, but we had acres in both corn and soybeans higher than last year. And do you think there are really more acres out there that can be switched into one or both of those crops?
Wheat was the big twist, and also the CRP acres.
Yeah, so we lost the soft red winter wheat, but that should have been fixed into that number, except maybe for soft. Well, we lost a lot in soft red winter wheat, but the number of acres that they tore up, maybe that's not so many, I wouldn't think.
Well, it's tricky with the wheat and the beans because you don't know whether or not you're counting full-season beans or double-crop beans, and that's where it gets a little tricky, at least in the early estimates here. But there's a long ways. You can travel in this lower third of the Midwest and not even see a wheat cell. I mean, you can travel 100 miles and not even see a wheat field. So there's not much soft red winter wheat planted. Now, I know there's some out there, those acres, and like I said, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, where they've had a tendency, wet soils, it's hard for them to dry out early. You know, they're in there aggressively planting now, so they're off to a good season, too. So there is no doubt we're going to see we have the potential anyway to start with. Now, I guess it worries me somewhat is that we've had such an excellent spring planting season that and it's been excellent because it's been basically dry compared to what we've had the past couple of years. Is that an indication that we're going to stay on the drier side of normal as we go through the growing season? And if that's the case, then a lot of these marginal areas that are lighter soils may not have the yield kick they did last year with all the rain, and maybe that national average yield may not be quite as high as what everybody's trying to pencil in right now.
I'm sure Wayne picked this up too, but at the south half of Illinois and Indiana that was a little wet last year, they had to plant a little more corn just to get the rotation back in. And the old rule is if you didn't plant wheat, you go into corn on that ground.
Yeah, that's very true, Paul. And we talk about wheat acres lost that would have been double crop beans, but now will be first crop beans. I know of three customers in Arkansas that their prevented plant check on wheat that they collected was well in excess of $100,000 each. So that's how many acres, and they only get paid at 60% on your guarantees and like that. So there was probably over $500,000 of wheat guarantees that were paid out down there just to three or four people.
Let's turn our attention to demand and global demand at this point, whether that be here in the United States with the domestic livestock production for ethanol production in the U.S., global exports. We've talked a bit about China and corn. Of course, they were in really heavily for soybeans, loaded up front pretty much. Will they continue to do that as a secondary question? Can demand gobble up all of the crop that we're going to produce if we come out in normal growing season?
I would say probably not. I mean, I know demand is definitely strong. It, especially corn demand, has really picked up here over the past 30, 60 days. You can just look at our weekly export sales, what we're selling now compared to what we were selling in the middle part of the winter. We were barely selling, you know, 20 million bushels, 22 million. Now, here last week, we sold about 79 million in one week. So, demand has picked up, but we still have to realize that we're going to carry over. We may not carry over as big a number as what USDA says we are, because demand, export demand in corn has been good enough here the last 3-4 weeks that they may have to push that up a little bit yet before the season's out. So our carryover may not be quite as large as what the trade was working. But if this corn crop comes on strong, we're going to see a very early harvest, and it'll be a quick harvest if weather is favorable, and we're going to see some pressure points.
You know, the easiest one to talk about demand is, let's look at production first, and then we'll slip in the demand equation. The only dry spot that we know of in the world is the Ukraine and Russia, and their forecasters are talking about rain going into that part of the area. I've worried that possibly I was too bearish on things. And, you know, we all want to get a little wild every once in a while and try to bottom pick in here for that summer rally so we could make a big, you know, buy another Cadillac, so to speak. But I think the bottom line is that we have to be very careful here because Washington is beating up on a lot of derivative players, meaning commodity traders. They're wanting to change some of the rules, and there's a big conversation. And if you take a big player off the table in Washington in trading oils and metals and letting certain companies have special hedging tools, it might take a few of the players off to the table. And that's creating some interest as far as speculation is concerned.
Hey, you just flipped something in my mind. Did you catch the news story out of the CME group that they're asking for commodity swaps now for agricultural products? Did you see that? What does that mean? Does that mean that those players can be back in the marketplace because they would be – that would be a private deal, one company to another, but sort of off of the market, and then it would come back on the market.
Well, each of us probably has our own definition, but let's just say I'm a big company, and I worry about weather being raining during the month of October to get my cotton crop in. I go to somebody, to XYZ company, AIG, and I want some sort of a off exchange traded guarantee that that I can get my cotton harvested or something, or I can buy it at a certain price. And some of these people do write insurance projects and they do hedge some way. But what's your take on that, guys?
Well, I guess I'm I kind of like the exchange traded system because it does guarantee integrity and is financially backed. When you get into this derivatives, you don't know whether or not that guy that took the other side of that is really capable of paying up if we have a big move in the marketplace. And we saw that here 2 years ago in the stock market, all the derivatives that there just was no money there. There was no insurance to back it up. So I'm in favor of more exchange-traded type products. But swaps are a little different because you're depending upon what you're swapping one train maybe for another train in a different location or inventory in a different location. So it depends upon how it's put together and how transparent it is and how much guarantee there is on that.
I'd have to agree with Dan. I think the transparency is very important. That's what happened to the housing market. Basically, they were insuring against that they were going to fail, and then they ended up not having enough money. And that's what happened to a lot of the big banks and what happened to our housing industry. And I think had it been exchange-traded, had it had transparency, and they had to have margin money up there, it'd be just like the Board of Trade that's been solvent for years and will continue to be solvent because of all their strict rules, even if we all don't like making margin calls from time to time.
Yeah, I do remember from the CME Group's press release that it was agricultural commodity swaps. And that eventually, after the swap had been made, and I don't know how it works exactly, but they would be required to make margin and all the things that normally would happen within a contract that you would have or a futures contract that you might buy or sell on the Chicago Board of Trade or the CME Group. So,
well, that's the only way you're going to be able to guarantee fulfillment of a contract because there's a lot of these derivative contracts out there in the agricultural community that are over the counter, and some of them may be have strong financial backing behind them, but then there's a whole bunch that may not. So I would be very skeptical of any over the counter type product.
All right, let's back up and take a very wide view of the globe and the economy. And I'm wondering if you've thought very much about the recent economic turmoil, the last 2 years, and the current economic turmoil, and how that might be rebalancing the world and bringing the world into balance. For instance, China's got, 1.3 billion people in it. They were a third world nation, a developing nation. Might they be becoming a power at that point? And if they do you have to rebalance that with Europe and with the United States? And what does that mean for a producer here in the Midwest. I suppose it appears at this point that it means they've got higher prices at a new plateau, at least, for their commodities, but they also have higher input prices. Have you thought very much about this?
Well, the only thing that the two things that I'm extremely worried about is, of course, Brazil. Brazil is a very efficient market. They're a very powerful market. They're raising a lot of corn. They're starting to improve their transportation. And then I'm also worried about the government side taking, you know, price supports and price guarantees and insurance products away from the farmer. And, of course, I don't think government is supporting the ethanol industry like they've hinted they should. And this is a big problem to me. But I think that with vocal support, you know, we can work through, you know, some of these things for agriculture. But it's a very competitive environment, and we still have to be very shrewd marketers and players in the game.
So you're suggesting that agricultural policy is the way to guide yourself through a rebalancing, if that's actually what's happening in the larger economic policy issues on the world front, right?
Well, we're seeing that China and India are becoming more a larger world power than we are in many respects, and because it's their buying. We can remember 20 years ago when the word Russia was said, that we watched the markets boil like they did when they said China about corn this past week, Todd. And they are becoming the X factor out there, I guess, is to say whether it's going to be up there around like that. I think also that we do need to be in contact with Washington now as they do talk about the new farm bill and what they're doing, because I think that it's very much a shame what Secretary Vilsack is doing and how he is not worried about the safety nets with the insurance, with trying to put lump everything into a whole farm attitude and based on a state or county level rather than let individuals work and market their own grain.
Well, I just think we're in an era here that we're going to have a lot of volatility, a lot of uncertainty. We're going to see a lot of mixed signals, not only here in the United States, but from around the world. And I think farmers are going to have to double their efforts or redouble their efforts as far as using risk management tools to protect the downside and still keep the upside open, because we just don't know what we're going to wake up to tomorrow morning, next week, next month. And just like what we've experienced this week, I think this is just part of it. It's just going to we're just in a period that we're going to see a lot of uncertainty, a lot of mixed signals, and the stuff that we were taught to correlate with is not necessarily going to correlate in the future, and farmers have to take it upon themselves and look at each end of their operation and see how they can protect themselves from downside risk but still keep opportunities open on the upside.
A final word from each of you. We'll start with you, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services.
Well, I think television helped bring back a lot of the volatility in the marketplace on this week, just watching the rioting in Greece.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
It's been a very volatile week, and we hope that you've taken advantage of the little rallies we've had in the past 2 weeks.
And Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group.
About the same. I you know, there's no doubt that there's some worries out here, some turbulent times, but I wouldn't necessarily think that this week here is panic city yet.
Our thanks to each of our panelists in studio. Remember, you can always listen to Commodity Week online anytime you'd like. Just visit willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find Commodity Week, other agricultural programming, and a way to sign up for our free weekend newsletter. Thank you for listening, and you have a very safe and productive week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.